Hello again, everybody. I'm Alan Lytle, WUKY News. A new documentary being aired in Kentucky introduces viewers to the colorful characters who craft bourbon. Kentucky Bourbon Tales, distilling the family business, draws from oral history interviews conducted by the University of Kentucky's Louis B. Nunn Center for Oral History. Joining me in the studio today to talk about it are Dr. Doug Boyd, director of the Nunn Center, and Kentucky Bourbon Tales director Joanna Hay. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Joanna, let's talk first with you about this project. What got you into this?
Well, I've been doing oral history video interviews since about 2006, and I've worked with Doug on and off on a variety of projects. And when the Buffalo Trace Oral History Project came about, I was brought on as the videographer for that project, and that sort of began our bourbon journey, didn't it, Doug?
That's right. That's right. And that project very quickly morphed from an oral history project to a documentary that ran on KET as well. So the Kentucky Bourbon Tales Oral History Project was an attempt to document other distilleries, especially ones that were along the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, and that's gotten so popular worldwide now. And we've done interviews at multiple distilleries, as well as Independent Stave, as well as some of the smaller distilleries. And so because the Kentucky Bourbon Trail has gotten so popular, it was a logical pairing to partner with the Kentucky Distillers Association to get this oral history project off the ground. And it became very clear as we progressed through the oral history project that we had something very special here. And so that's when Joanna and I began to embark on this documentary journey and to really make the documentary something that was going to really come out of this oral history collaboration.
And now what we have is just this, it's a delight for the eyes. I've seen it. It's a delight for the eyes in that you get to see the beautiful settings where these distilleries are.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun collecting this footage. And you can just see the way the river and the land all, you know, come together with these, you know, warehouses and the distilleries and these amazing places. So we really wanted to set that that tone opening up the film.
But also the interview settings, you know, several of these interviews were actually done in warehouses, and you know, you've got rows and rows and rows of barrels, and Joanna of course had to do those interviews as the videographer, but visually stunning. And so that it's a very visual project for us, in addition to having this great oral history component, this interviewing component. So that, of course, is an advantage for sure.
Yeah.
When a person thinks oral history, they're automatically thinking of just the audio. But you bring up an interesting point, Doug. Oral history more and more is going the video realm.
There's no doubt. And the Nunn Center is in many ways leading the way, but other people are doing it as well, that the visual element is so appealing. We're not doing video for every one of our projects. There's still something to be said for really good audio as we do this interview on radio. It's a very compelling medium, but there are certain projects that I think really dovetail nicely with video and having a strong video and visual element, and this was one of those projects.
And obviously, to have a partner in Kentucky Educational Television to, you know, an outlet to display this, that was integral as well, correct, Joanna?
Yeah, they were very eager to get this program on the air, so, and we're all delighted that they are airing it, and we've got quite a few air dates still coming up. It's scheduled through February on KET and also streaming online. But I wanted to get back to a couple of visual comments about all of the wonderful archival still images that we were able to use to illustrate the stories. So as people would talk about, you know, historic parts of the process of making bourbon and what they remember it used to be like versus what it's like now and how things have stayed the same, but some have changed. We really had a wealth of imagery to pull from the archives as well.
Especially since it was also a family topic. And so a lot of these photographs that we're looking at are family photographs. And that was, I think, one of the neat things. So when Fred Noe is talking about his father, you know, Booker Noe, you're able to really tap into the visual elements, and those were really family photographs, the Samuels family photographs, the Noe family photographs, the Beam, the Shapiros, they offered photographs as well. And I think that's also something that's very special about this particular project is the family orientation, which is why we ended up steering that direction with the title.
With the subtitle. And not just families as in the Noes or the Samuelses. It's really the industry family. And one of the stories that illustrates that family closeness and how the industry helps they help each other across the brands and across the companies, is the story of the Heaven Hill fire in 1996.
Which was devastating and, you know, could have put Heaven Hill out of business if the industry had taken another stance. And instead of taking that stance, they really rallied. And it wasn't just one distillery. It was multiple distilleries that ensured that they really didn't miss a beat.
It's readily apparent when you watch this movie of just how tight-knit of a group that we're talking about. In this family business, yes, but at the same time, it's an industry. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that that people may not really realize, especially if they're not from Kentucky, they may not realize just how close-knit this community is.
Yep. They've known each other for generations in many cases, and they love each other across the companies.
They played together as children, a lot of these people who are now working for competing companies.
Yeah, those great photos of the Beams and the Samuels family, all in Bardstown, and this group of 10 children all playing together.
And so people that may not love bourbon, but they can certainly appreciate the fact that this is a family industry, a family business, and the fact that it is so inherently Kentucky.
It is, and the surprise of these Kentuckians like Fred Noe, who says, or Jimmy Russell and Eddie Russell, his son, who say they're like rocks, you know, they're rock stars now around the world. And these are Kentucky boys who are being treated like rock stars when they arrive in Sydney, Australia.
And Japan and Russia and, you know, you name it. So they are on sort of tour when they do these kind of things, just like a rock star. And it's amazing to then sit down in the room with them and speak to them in this way, because the oral history interview isn't a media interview. It's designed to be a long-form interview that probes into the history and gets them to tell their stories a little bit differently. And that was a lot of fun, because, you know, when you do that for a living, you know, they've got their talking points. But these interviews, the raw interviews, really get them to tell stories that they're not necessarily used to telling on the road. And that, I think, is really exciting.
I wanted to mention Andrea Wilson's story as well, a woman who really worked her way up in the industry very consciously, tried to figure out how she could get into the industry, what education she needed, and she did it. She became a chemical engineer. She got a job at Stitzel Weller. She's now at Michter's. And her story is wonderful, not only her personal story and, you know, story of loss in her family, and in these kinds of oral history video interviews, they open up, and there were tears, and she's talking about the loss of her mother, but she pulled through, and of course, her grandfather was a bootlegger and a moonshiner, and apparently he had taught her a lot when she was growing up, too.
What I like about this model is that through the documentary, you can really see, you know, this wonderfully produced story that's very entertaining and educating at the same time. But these oral histories are all online. They're all very searchable. They're in this interface that if you search on the word vanilla, it takes you to the moment when somebody says the word vanilla in the long-form interview. And so I really love this model because you can go from the entertaining documentary really within seconds to dig deeper and really hear much more from these stories. And that, you know, that's where I think Joanna and I really have enjoyed this collaboration over the years of filmmaking and oral history and bringing those two things together.
You have to be of one mind, don't you, in that regard, because here we are telling the stories and people are for hours and hours and hours. That was going to be one of my questions, is how do you boil it all down or distill, if you will, you know, some of the best stuff and what kind of got left on the cutting room floor that you regret not being able to include in there?
Well, I'm gonna start off because I mean that's where I think the collaboration with somebody like Joanna really is important, because that's not really what we do at the Nunn Center, where our job is to really get these interviews done and preserve them. But a filmmaker who has sort of the vision and, you know, the story really is the most important part of any kind of documentary, no matter how cool the footage is. If the story's not there, it's not there. And that's where I think she really brings something very special to the table.
I almost always know at the end of the interview what that special moment was, and it sticks in my mind. And almost every time it's the obvious choice and connects with the whole story. It's either where the person really was, you know, speaking from their heart. There was something really novel about what they were telling us about, not that rote story that they've told the press 100 times, but that really special kind of thing that they wanted to tell us. And I almost always know what it is, and it always almost always makes the cut.
Or the funny moment, because I tell you what, there are so many funny moments in these interviews, and it's probably the first time on a project that I've had that collection of humorous stories that was really where it becomes hard to pick and choose, because you only have so many in a documentary, so much time, and there are so many stories in this.
And the humor of all of these documentaries, I think, is the most important thing. If it's not funny, you know, if it doesn't touch you in that kind of way, you know, you miss your audience. Parker Beam. I mean, did Parker Beam make us laugh every time he told us a little story?
And, of course, Wild Turkey, Jimmy Russell, you know, he could probably tell a million stories himself.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
The Parker story was interesting in that Parker Beam has ALS, so his speech is very halting. And we were concerned that would be difficult for people to access and listen to. But in a lot of ways, it made people listen even more closely, and you really paid attention, and you saw his humor under there.
And it was really special that we were able to do that, because that in some ways was the genesis of this round of these interviews, was really when Parker was initially diagnosed. That's when we really kicked into gear for the Oral History Project and said, this needs to happen. How can we make this happen now? And so he was our first interview scheduled and was really, you know, part of a big rallying cry. I think that's what also got a lot of the other distilleries excited about this project and interested in participating in it because of that. So I really loved at the end, you know, when the documentary was finalized, that he could play a major role in that.
Yeah.
And this is obviously preserving a part of the past, but do you foresee a Bourbon Tales 2 and another generation coming along?
We definitely commit to documenting the bourbon industry in an ongoing way. I think it's really important for us to take seriously certain areas of Kentucky's story. And there are charges that I think I have as the director of the Nunn Center that make it my responsibility to make this a continuing, ongoing thing. There is so many more stories in the Bourbon Project that need to be told. And I think on this particular project, I'd really like to see us dig deeper into each individual distillery, but also as we start to diversify and broaden out, there's so much that's exciting about what's happening in the craft distilleries, and that's where a lot of these really interesting stories are taking place. And so now is the time to capture those stories rather than waiting till it's too late. And so fortunately, this has been a good mechanism for us to kick that into gear.
I'd like to learn lots more about the different jobs that people have, long-term employees who have been in these, you know, doing a particular bottling job, or how labeling has changed over the years. Really looking at all those levels of people working in this craft, and they're all very proud of what they do.
And it is very much both an art and a craft. It's not just a business. You know, these aren't people who are just doing jobs. They're artisans in many ways. The people who deal with the aging aspect have an astonishing knowledge of chemistry and of environment and understanding what will the impact be of putting a barrel up on the second floor or putting it in a different part of the warehouse. What will the impact be on the flavor profile and on the aging process? And that, I think, is what I think is very special about documenting this, because we really are taking part in that transmission of knowledge. I do see a time where sometimes, you know, people who are newly trained in jobs or taking classes at the university level, I think we have a bourbon class here at the University of Kentucky now. I think it would be wonderful for them someday to log on and find out how some of these master distillers did their job, or how some of the warehouse people did their jobs, or how. And so there really is an education. It's not just entertainment. There is really a very strong educational, cultural aspect to this project that we take very seriously.
You know, we're not just talking about the distillers and the distilling companies. We've also got the suppliers and the distribution networks that could be part of this story, the ongoing bourbon story as well. And I think on the last Saving Stories episode, you all were talking about Brad Boswell and Independence Dave. So the cooperage that supplies all of the white oak barrels to the industry, they're part of this bourbon family too. So there are layers and layers to explore.
they're an integral part of the bourbon family. I mean, this is the barrel. It plays such a big role, as we've learned, and as you'll learn by watching this documentary. That's one of the things that really popped out of this particular story that we're telling is the role of the barrel in that. And that was exciting to really have that articulated onto the record.
And people really haven't seen that side of it. So visually, you're seeing these flaming barrels rolling through this cooperage, you know, and being doused by the sprinkling of water to keep everything from burning down. And these people moving at an incredibly fast rate. Creating these barrels, you know, which there's a huge demand for. We're running out of barrels to put bourbon in.
And then move the camera left and see all the tourists who are standing there with goggles on watching the whole thing take place.
Smoke in their face, and they couldn't care less, you know, at that point.
That's what they wanted.
Right.
Well, we are out of time for this segment, but just want to remind people that Kentucky Bourbon Tales, Distilling the Family Business, airs for the next several weeks on Kentucky Educational Television. For a complete schedule, you can check out their website. That's at KET.org. Doug Boyd, director of the Louis B. Nunn Center for Oral History, and Joanna Hay have been my guest. And best of luck as you continue to tell the story of bourbon throughout Kentucky.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.